You're listening to an Olive Pit production. Welcome to the show. I'll be your host. Let's get to it.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Look for the Helpers. We have a pretty good edition here today, I think.
Morning.
Yes. Today we've got Robin Jackson with us.
Hello.
Yay.
Of course, we have Dr. Nicole Navega.
Hello.
I forget if I have the clap.
I didn't get clap.
I mean, I don't have the clap. I was looking for. That was
no. That's not okay.
I'm glad you have a soundboard.
Today we're going to be talking about EMDR, right?
One of my favorite topics.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about having this guest in now a couple of times, and just scheduling and everything has kind of gotten in the way, but we finally got to it. Yes. Robin, I believe, is pretty excited to be here.
I am. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and we're very excited to have her. Robin, we have to kind of get our traditions out of the way at first here. Okay. So we've got some icebreaker questions.
Okay.
Now,
Robin is scared of nothing, but for some reason she's afraid of this.
I'm afraid of the unknown. Yeah, which is like I found out in EMDR.
I can pick one for you, or you can choose a category.
Okay, what are the category options?
Well, I'll give you your category.
Okay.
I'm not going to say this word. Well, I'm going to have Nicole say this word for me. Oh. Do you remember the word?
No.
The one you gave me such a hard time for last time?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Quirky.
Oh, you don't know the word quirky?
I do know the word quirky.
Quirky.
Thank
quirky.
You. Thank you.
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay. That's go on. You know what?
That's so...
Quirky.
Okay.
Food and drink.
Okay.
Personal.
Okay.
General. Entertainment. Or have you ever? Oh, God.
Which you think is bad, but it's not.
They're not.
They're like G-rated.
I mean, we're not talking about like being in Nashville or anything.
In Nashville.
I'll let you pick one. Just go ahead and pick
okay.
one.
Okay. All right.
Dealer's choice.
Would you like to pick one, or would you like me to pick one for you? Or do you want the same?
What about, well, I kind of like the same.
I know.
But what about entertainment?
Okay, entertainment. Let's
do that. I have no idea what's in there, by the way. I liked the last one we did, though. That was a good one.
If you were a wrestler.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
What would be your entrance theme song?
And
what would be your name?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I need a lot of time to think
about
this.
I would need a lot of time to think about this.
But the first thing that popped up into my brain, so I'm just going to give you the first thing that came up, was Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses.
Like
that was the first thing that popped into my head. Yeah. And what's the second part of it?
And what would be your name?
Oh. Do you guys remember the old American Gladiator?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yes.
So that was like one of my favorite shows. Yeah. And I loved
I think Ice.
Yeah, I loved like all the names of them.
He was the tall one.
I think
one,
Ice
right,
was one of
my
the
favorite
females.
Was Nitro, the guy in Nitro. Okay. I used to have a mini Nitro and I would bring him everywhere that I went. I would put him on the table at the restaurant, and when the waitress would
How old were you?
I was probably in college. Wow, I swear to God, I was in college. I was doing it for kicks because my friends thought I was bananas. But the waitress would, she would say, she would be done with the order. And I'd be like, wait, what about
Nitro?
You didn't ask Nitro what he wants.
I feel like something I would have done.
I just feel like I would be Nitro.
Okay. All right. Nitro. I'm going to call you Nitro.
Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses, and Nitro.
Next episode, theme song change. And we'll be interviewing with Nitro.
Yes, exactly.
Do you want me to sew
my,
you
my
a costume?
Alter ego?
I can sew you
Ooh,
a costume.
Yes,
oh,
yes, yes.
That'd be amazing. Could you please?
Please. Please do them.
All right, Robin. For you, I'm going to give you Have You Ever.
Okay.
All right? I know the answer to that one, so that's not going to be a good one for you. I know the answer to that one.
You just know how well do you guys know each other?
Okay, well, have you ever lived in another state? Yes, I know you came from another state.
Okay, even I know that.
Have you ever been in a natural disaster like a hurricane? Well, as I know that. So,
why are these?
All right, so you know what? We'll do something else. We'll do sci-fi because I know you're kind of into some sci-fi stuff. If you could have a superpower, what would it be and why?
It would be X-ray vision.
X-ray vision?
Yes.
Now, why?
Because there's been so many times, more specifically for work, because there's been so many times that we've gone on calls where people say, I don't know if it's broken. And I'm like, well, they don't give us X-ray vision when we get hired, so I can't tell you whether it is or not. So it would probably...
So purely for professional reasons.
I didn't even think of the implications of that. Yes, purely for professional
reasons. I wouldn't mind X-ray vision either. Well, so X-ray vision. I would like to be... So what I was going to ask is, would you be able to dial in the X-ray? Like, can you determine how deep the layer goes? Because I would like X-ray vision as well, but I would like to be able to control the sensitivity of the X-ray.
I don't know. I hadn't thought that far. I was just more so thinking about for
professional
reasonings.
I'll take X-ray vision for personal.
Okay.
Reasons.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. All right. Very good. So EMDR.
Yes.
I don't know much about EMDR, but we've talked about it several times, and that's the extent of my knowledge with EMDR. So can we know a little bit more about EMDR?
Yeah, sure. So in 1987, Dr. Francine Shapiro, it really was developed in about 1987. Sort of anecdotally, this woman, this California psychologist, Dr. Francine Shapiro, basically the legend has it that she was taking a long walk, was having some distressing, was a distressing moment in her life. And she found that during this walk, if she would move her eyes from right to left rapidly, which was basically like the tree canopies, she found that it was soothing to her and that it was eliminating the distressing thoughts that she had.
Okay.
So that's when she first developed it. And then they just started to... do some research, try out protocols, things like that. And then it became standardized in the early 90s. I think the manual came out, the actual protocol came out in 95. If you go to any EMDR therapist, it's an 8-phase protocol. So it's the same process no matter where you go.
Okay. And when you say 8-phase protocol, is it like phase one is you come in, we fit you, we do?
Yeah. It's basically, it's prep, it's getting some history, it's, trying to figure out, I'm assuming that you're a therapist.
If it's going to work for you.
Yeah, if it's good for you. A lot, the first stages are explaining what it is, right? Most people don't understand what it is or how it even works. So some of it is that. So I'll tell you that. So for those of you who don't know, it stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Okay.
And so essentially what it does in layman's terms is that it uses your natural information processing system, which is complex, but to make it simple, it activates your REM state, the thing that happens, rapid eye movement, that happens while you're sleeping. It activates that while you're awake, while you're doing this, by utilizing a process called bilateral stimulation. Everybody has a different way of using bilateral stimulation. In my office, I have a light bar. The lights go back and forth. There's buzzers or tappers that go back and forth, and headphone that has audio bilateral stimulation. You sync it all up. It goes back and forth, sort of recreating your REM state for you. And during that time, you can use a couple of different techniques, but essentially what it can do is desensitize an event that has sort of a high emotional intensity or emotionally charged event. It can take you from a distress level score of 10 out of 10 to, maybe a 1 or a 2. Most of the first responders that I talk to don't ever say it's a complete 0. Not sure how you feel about that. You can talk about that. But most people say, I don't have, it's not a zero on the distress level because it still happened. I still remember it. Right.
Right.
It's not like we wipe memories away.
Right.
Okay. It's just kicking.
So it's not like Men in Black.
No, okay. No, it's not. It's not. Cool. And so it's just kicking down that intensity level. That's the desensitization part of it. The reprocessing part of it is if people have attached a negative cognition, a negative thought to the distressing event, and they've made it mean something bad about themselves. So something like, I'm a failure. I'm not enough. I'm not lovable. Like whatever the thing is, right? We all have core negative beliefs. But if this particular event gets attached to a negative cognition, we really want to be able to take that thought, desensitize the event, and replace that thought with something that is more palatable. It's sort of like, well, the way that we ask it is, how would you rather feel about that event?
Okay.
And then what happens is in traditional therapy, which we would call cognitive behavioral therapy, and you probably spent years doing this too, right? That we could talk about those things, right? We could talk about, I'll use an example as a call. Sometimes you guys come into my office and we'll say, not you guys, not you two,
right.
Anybody will come into my office and say, oh, you know, we lost a pediatric arrest. It was devastating. And I wish that I took a fire guy in the back of my truck because I'd have another set of hands, right? So I'm listening keenly for those types of things because that signals to me that they're blaming themselves. Right. And maybe even it's just a hint, but still, we don't want any of our people to be blaming themselves for something that isn't their responsibility, right? So we could talk for 10 years about that event and I could say, and you could say to the person, you did the best that you could. And so we identify that as the replacement thought perhaps, but there's something that's happening inside of the brain when you use EMDR that the brain does the work for you.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter if I tell you you did the best that you could if you don't believe it, right? So there's something happening where it creates a new neural pathway that allows you to recognize and your brain sort of goes like, boom, right? The light goes off and your brain makes that connection and is like, oh yeah, I'm lovable. I did the best that I could or whatever the thing is, right? And that's how it goes. That's the idea of it in general, how it works.
Okay.
But I've seen it be completely transformative for people, even in as little as one session.
Really?
The data on it is that it's one of the number one trauma treatments. It's had about 30 randomized control trials, so it's an evidence-based practice. And the stats say that for a one-time single event, which obviously is not possible for first responders because there's not a one-time single event,
right?
But for one-time events, and calls are in some ways one-time events because they're not long-term, it's not a long-term abusive relationship that someone's processing, it's a one-time event. So we can take one call at a time, right? We could just do one call at a time. But I've seen people have a massive transformation in 45 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
And now you do this.
Yes.
In your office?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then I'm assuming, just like any other kind of medical treatment, every other kind of medical treatment, some will respond and some will not.
Right? Yeah.
It's not a one size fits all.
No, it's not for everyone. Anecdotally, like how I see it, my experience has been that if you don't believe that it works, if you come in and you think it's hocus pocus, it's not going to work likely for you. The other thing that I learned the hard way is that if you have someone who is like an uber perfectionist, it's hard for perfectionists to tolerate the first few minutes. This, you may remember this when you first did it. The first few minutes, one of the things that we do as the lights are running or the bilateral stimulation is going, essentially it's a script and we say to you after the light runs, we say, depending on what technique we're using, we might say, what's coming up for you now? Or if we're trying to just desensitize the event, we would say, coming back to the original targeted event, what's changed now? Because we're trying to change the image, right? Lessen the intensity of it. And they'll say nothing. And then I'll go, okay, we're going to keep going. You run the light again. And then you say, what's coming up for you now? Nothing. Run it again. What's coming up for you now? Nothing. Sometimes what happens is that your brain needs to settle down, right? Your brain's sitting in front of a light. You don't know what's happening. You're like, this is like voodoo. Some people call it the voodoo stick in my office, right? Okay. The light going back and forth. Because a lot of people leave and they're like, whoa, I don't even know how that worked, but like it feels like magic. So they're a little bit skeptical about it. But the people who are perfectionists have a hard time with sitting with the nothing's happening because your brain just hasn't settled in yet. So perfectionists tend to default to their core negative belief, which is, I'm so broken that even this won't work for me.
I'm watching Robin respond. And when you said perfectionist, Robin and I have recently worked on some projects together, and
very much a perfectionist.
Robin, so many of you are. So it was interesting to watch while you were talking. She
just because I remember the talks with my therapist at the beginning, because I also was extremely skeptical because my husband had gone through it, and he was like, yeah, it works and it worked great for me, and I'm like, I don't think that this is. Yeah, I don't think that that's possible. It sounds like hypnotism, and I've never been like a, and you know, went through the steps with my therapist. She's like, we have to make sure you're able to even like accept it,
right?
Like in your brain, did all that, and she's like, you're kind of still like on the cusp, but I think we should try it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. So before you started all of that, what, if you don't mind, what was it that brought you there?
So right when I finished EMT school, I got my first 24-hour job. And I had a pediatric code 3 months into my career. It was a pediatric abuse type thing. Mm-hmm. And we ran the call. We had like four of us in the back of the truck going to the hospital. And when we got back, unfortunately, I worked for a very small 911, small community county service in Kentucky. And the director, it was a private 911, said, you know, well, you guys probably did more harm than good by having four people in the back. So instantly.
That's not great.
Instantly that had always stuck with my head in my head. I didn't really realize that call had affected me. Mm-hmm. Until, you know, three years down the road, when we moved back down to Florida, and I had another pediatric code in the Cape that ended up being the same type of circumstances, and it just brought everything up. So I started going to therapy, just regular therapy. I started doing CPT mm-hmm. with Lee Health, which was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Cognitive processing therapy,
yes. Because she was able to identify that a lot of what I was dealing with wasn't necessarily the calls themselves, but it was the beliefs that I had in myself and the beliefs of other people and the world around me that I needed to change in my head, because that's what was causing me like a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. Even after those calls, getting tones would just, my heart rate would spike to 130. I would think that it's the worst call ever. Hearing other calls, other units getting cardiac arrest, and they're like pediatric, it would just re-trigger all of those. So completed cognitive processing therapy. My therapist diagnosed me with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And continued did all the courses with, the trigger points and everything like that, worked through all of it. All the worksheets felt really good. So I just continued seeing her just because it was good to, I felt like it was good to just see a therapist on the regular. So I saw her like twice a month and just talked about just regular stuff. And then I don't know what point, like it just, in my mindset changed, but I would go through these bouts of depression and, they would escalate into like suicidal ideation and nobody, I mean, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky person. I'm very extroverted. I'm always smiling and laughing and joking with people. So a lot of people had no idea that I would come to work, joke with them, and then drive home and think about how I was going to do it. It wasn't until Fred had noticed that a lot of my behavior at home was changing that he's like, hey, because he had already completed EMDR with you. And I don't know if I should say that, but sorry, honey. But he recognized a lot of like what I was going through. He's just like, you need to go talk to somebody and this is what you need to do. And that's when I went through the whole, oh, I'm really skeptical about this. I don't think it's going to work, blah, blah, blah. And I found one through my other therapist, cause my therapist had moved to a different county. So it did the same thing. I did like the intake paperwork and intake, like meeting with her and everything. She's like, you're kind of on the cusp of maybe may not work, but I'd like to try. So
this is the amazing genie, right?
No.
Oh,
was
it?
That is, no, it oh, was. Okay. So I went and I saw Sydney with iBoss counseling. Okay.
The amazing iBoss.
The amazing iBoss. they were wonderful. Like I would absolutely go see her. Again, I told her, I'm like, just keep me on your payroll because you never know when I'm going to need you.
And shout out to iBoss because they do see a ton of first responders and they know first responders and they know how to do the work.
And then
I
think that was the big, especially with Jeannie, that was one of the biggest things with Jeannie is Jeannie kind of knew like what we go through, even though she's never been one herself, but she helps a lot of us. So she knows exactly like what we deal with and what we go through.
Well, Jeannie completed the clinician awareness program through the Florida Firefighters Health and Safety Collaborative.
I did not know that part.
Yes.
So that she would was at my, she's,
she was at the training that I was at. Yeah.
That would be why she's, responds really well to us.
Yeah.
So, so I did my intake session with her and then went for the first time. She gave me the option of using, 3 out of 4. Mm-hmm. The light bar does nothing for me whatsoever. So I had the vibration, the handheld things. I had the earphones and, what am I thinking? That was it, right? Yeah. So, I had 2 out of 3 and then it was just, we talked about my target points because having gone through CPT, I knew kind of what I was struggling with, what my beliefs were of myself and that I had a hard time changing. So I went in with like 7 target points. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, she would ask me, this is what we're going to talk about. So I want you to think about this and then I'm going to turn it on. And I would think about that scenario. I would get kind of emotional. She would turn it on and it would just like floodgates. Yeah. Like, and I had no, like it was all happening subconsciously.
Right.
Like I couldn't control it. I couldn't like, it was one of those things that you try to control with your brain, but it was just like, haha, just kidding. You're just you're going to have to work through this or it's just going to open it up. And when one of the things that she didn't really tell me is that when you go work through these target points, it's going to open more target points.
Right.
So, and it went from talking about calls at work and how I felt about those calls and those beliefs that were created on those traumatic incidences about other people, about those parents, about these calls, about myself. It started opening up these other like traumatic incidents that had happened in my life prior to even doing EMS, where my belief may have been created a long time ago. Were things from 20 years ago that whether it was something someone said, whether it was something someone did, directly correlates to how and why I felt a certain way about this type of situation and why it was so quick to just latch itself onto that trauma.
Right.
And So I went in with 7 trigger points and worked through them. But I think after I did 6 months of EMDR once a week for like the first 3 months. And then once I started feeling pretty comfortable and working through things, I was able to go to once every 2 weeks. And then, I ended up with like 21 mm-hmm. trigger points that I didn't realize that I had. Mm-hmm. And it was stuff that wasn't even related to my job. It was just stuff that had gone on in my life.
Right.
When I was a teenager, when I was young, like even as young as 7, there were things that were said to me by friends or parents that even if it wasn't meant maliciously,
right.
In my head, it had created a certain belief mm-hmm. that when I come up to that situation again, it's instantly a negative belief of myself. Right. And that just, it's like compounded trauma.
Right.
And you don't realize your brain is even doing it.
Right.
So going through the EMDR and just, it's almost like the way I described it to my therapist, it's like your brain opens up. It's like you're literally Hannibal Lecter and your brain opens up and you're just sitting there and you're just like picking out these little pieces and it never goes away, but right. It's like they were just moved mm-hmm. where instead of being like on the very forefront of your head, like it's not the first thing. If I hear a pediatric code, the first thing I think of isn't mine, isn't negativity, it's, I hope that the crews there are, you know, with it and mentally able to capable and like all these things. Like I used to think, oh my gosh, what did the parents do? Like it was, oh my gosh, how dare, you know, it was mm-hmm. always the first negative thing. And it never goes away. Mm-hmm. It's never going to go away. It's always going to be in my head, but it affects me less. Right. Whereas tones still give me anxiety because they're loud and very sure. aggressive, but it doesn't give me that jumping heart rate, that instant, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. where it's, oh my gosh, this could be the worst call ever. It's okay. This is going to be a call. We're going to go in. We're only going to be able to do our best. We can only do what we can do. And that's that. And once I was able to start looking at that differently because of EMDR and changing that belief structure in my head, yeah. I feel so much better.
So there's so much to unpack.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's all so good. So much to unpack. But I want to go back to what you said about, I should have a notepad. I should have a notepad here. I want to go back to where you said that it was, these aren't your words, but when you said it, these were my words that came into my head. And I thought one of the things about therapy and particularly EMDR is that, and we try to tell people this, is that sometimes it feels like it gets worse before it gets better.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I can only imagine that this process is unlocking your brain,
yeah.
right? Like,
right.
Because we take these things in and we store them, and then as providers, we bury them.
We shove them down, yeah.
Right? And then I can imagine this is just like saying, okay, open this box, yeah. and whatever is in that box is coming out, right? Yeah.
Well, it's classic Pandora's box.
That's honestly what it felt like, yeah. is it did. Probably within the first month and a half, I cried the most I've ever cried in my life.
Right.
And it wasn't even related to work. It was related to like relationships with my parents and relationships mm-hmm. with my friends and things that I thought I had processed,
right.
but I hadn't fully processed because I didn't remember all of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a full understanding of the situation. So it was a rough couple first months.
Yeah. And that's the power of our neural memory network, which is why we try to do so much prep up front. To get a good sense of like what might be in there, right? Like what are we going to come up against when we get you in front of the light, or yeah. I say in front of the light. But I guess my question to you is, because I find that with some people, too many people, there's this happens, right? They have a session, they feel worse, and then they don't want to do it again. which is one of the things that we just do not want to happen, because all it does is exacerbate the anxiety that they already have. And so it's just, it's like reinforcing the anxiety.
Yeah.
So I try to get people to come back and do it again.
But they've already created a negative belief with it.
Right. They've already done it. And again, that's why I mentioned the perfectionist, because I think it's those people who feel like this can't possibly work on me because I'm so broken.
Yeah.
But so what would you say to those people who, and it's from all different, like it's police officers, it's fire, yeah, right? No, it's everybody. What would you say to those people who feel like, I did it, I had a tremendous amount of anxiety while I was doing it, maybe I felt worse afterwards. What would you say to them to get them back to say, like, this does
work?
Yeah, besides the obvious, right?
I think one of the most important things that was for me was I had something to kind of bring me back down from that anxious feeling. So after, like before my appointments and after my appointments, I listened to music that had specific words and specific things that would kind of prepare my brain for going into that mentality. Because if you're not in that, for me, if I wasn't in the I'm ready to talk about this, I'm ready to work through it, then I would go there and it would negatively, I wouldn't feel like it would be beneficial for me.
So you have to be in the right state of mind to go do it.
I had to put myself in the right state of mind. I had to have like an hour before my appointment to just kind of breathe and take deep breaths okay, this is the target point that I know we're going to work on today. Let me think about, that to just kind of prep it. And then I would listen to like super soft classical music on the way there, stuff that would calm me. And because I knew that from prior sessions that I was going to feel that anxiety. I knew that I couldn't go in there with already feeling that I had to somehow calm myself, because I would be able to make it less intense of a feeling by the time we were done. Right. And then I would continue that same at home. I would listen to classical music that didn't have words. That way I could process everything. And one of the most important things that my therapist taught me afterwards was to take an hour or two after your session to just sit in the quiet and think about what you processed. Think about everything that happened. Think about, because that's part of the process thing. It's not like you do it for an hour and it's fixed.
Right.
You know, some of it was on my own at home. I created a little safe space in my bedroom that has like a relaxing chair and, lavender lights and smells. That was just like a calming area. And after every session, I would go home and I would process in that privacy, and thankfully my family knew, so they left me alone. And but I think that the key for me, because I was also very skeptical before going, was knowing that I am a perfectionist, and if I didn't go in with the right mindset for it, that I wasn't going to be successful in it.
But it sounds like that's the other ingredient, is that you're committed.
I think part of it was that if I were to have never gone to therapy in my life and then gone to EMDR, I don't think I would have been as successful with it.
Right.
I think that doing the CPT and attending a therapist and already having an understanding about how the belief system works in your head helped me even more with EMDR. Mm-hmm. Had I not gone through any of that, had I never been to a therapist in my life, I think that if I had gone to it, it would have freaked me out and I would not have been able to process what I was experiencing in the same way that I did, because I had the same type of processing already with CPT. Because it can be scary digging into your memories from 20 years ago that you forgot were even there.
Right.
Or never even knew were there.
Or never even knew were there. Mm-hmm. Or just were minuscule at the time.
Right.
But now compounded, you don't realize they're problems that have affected you as an adult.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like for the layperson that maybe just be doing it for the first time, it may feel a little aggressive. But I can tell you from experience that it works. I just don't know if it's because I had already had an understanding of how my brain functioned for me to be able to be successful in that therapy.
I think you are giving some really good tips about the pre-work that you were doing, you know, like prepping yourself with that, you know, the music or the mindset, you know, coming back to your house and not just having that space, but in having the family involved and knowing like, this is what I'm going to do when I get back. I think that's some really, really good advice for people.
And they thankfully, like, they were super supportive about it. And even, you know, my son who's 12, he knows how I was last year and everything. And, you know, I would talk to him about therapy and always touted it as a positive thing. Cause a lot of people can look at mental health and look at needing to go talk to it as a weakness. Sure. And it's not because
it's strength.
It is strength. It took a lot. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my 37 years of life. Yep. And I've done a lot of things in my 37 years of life. And that was the toughest thing I've ever done. And now when you get to your lowest of your low, and then you have that support system and you come out of it, it only makes you want to help other people do the same thing.
Right.
Because you can see yourself in them and you know how their brain is and how their brain is working and what they've been through and what they're going through up here. And it just makes you want to be like, hey, there, you can come out of this on the other side. Like I'm telling you, it's like this whole self-actualization thing is major. So I think being very even vocal about it with my son, being, you know, 11 last year going through that. Now he's been dealing with some stuff at school and he's like, I want to go talk to a therapist at 12 years old. And I'm like, buddy, I am so proud of you because for you to recognize at 12 years old that there's something not that you haven't worked out up here and that you might need to talk to somebody that's not mommy and daddy.
Right.
I got you. Let's go.
That's such a win.
It is.
That's awesome. I love it.
So it sounds like too that intense self-awareness is one of the things that helped you.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but when it comes to like my physiological needs were met, my home and my safety, security, my needs were met, you know, the love and belonging, I was working on that. And it wasn't until I finished EMDR that I got to the very top of that pyramid and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to help other people get to the top of this pyramid.
That's self-actualization.
And that's self-actualization. You know, and he added another one later on with self-transcendence where you have, you know, you believe in a higher power than yourself and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm slowly getting back to that because I was like raised in church and everything. And that stuff takes time because when you do have some traumatic beliefs tied to that, it's hard for that to go back to that. But, you know, but the self-actualization and wanting to help other people do that because you've seen like how you feel at the top of that pyramid. It's just the people don't always have those bottom parts of the pyramid.
That's true.
And it's hard to get to that top when you don't have those others.
Yep.
So. Sorry, was that your question, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was just saying, you know, you were very self-aware of what you needed.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like that probably helped your experience and helped you get through everything that you were going through.
I wasn't at first, though. You know, I didn't spend all of last year like being like, this is, I know this is exactly what I need. I had people around me that had been through going through the same thing or had those experiences that I had talked to that were like, hey, you know, this may be what you need.
Yeah.
Like I remember long conversations with Henderson about it. Like he recognized my behavior was different at work than it normally was. Right. And it wasn't until, you know, other people were like, hey man, you seem kind of down lately. I'm like, no, I'm good. You know, and just telling myself that, but other people were able to recognize that, hey, something's off about Robin. Mm-hmm. And I think having those people that you don't like, they're work buddies or acquaintances. They're not like in your life every day, but they recognize those parts of you that may be different than what they normally see from you, even if they see you very minimal. It took a little bit for me to recognize that other people were seeing it.
You're right.
That I wasn't seeing it myself.
Right. Thank God for those people who
I know.
Thank God.
Like we're all one big family, but I think that having those people in my corner, mm-hmm. that I may not talk to every day, I may not see every day, I maybe see once or twice, three, four, five times a month, but knowing that they recognize that something was off about me, I'm like, maybe there is something off mm-hmm. about me, you know, because you don't pay attention to those things yourself because you just play it off to, this is part of being an adult, you know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. not part of being an adult. It's really not. It's trauma that you've packed down for years and years and years that you don't realize is now affecting you as an adult.
Right. Yeah. So when you see a patient, mm-hmm. Is there something, and this is, I guess, you know, maybe a question for those people that are out there listening that are like, oh, well, maybe this is me. Like, is there like a set criteria, I don't want to say criteria, but like, is there a set of role that you see in these patients and then that identifies them or that they can, or is it like a trial kind of like, hey, let's try this? Or
so the thing about EMDR is that everyone thinks that EMDR is the flashing lights or the tappers or the headphones, right? They think like that's the thing,
right?
But the truth is EMDR is a sort of very comprehensive model, and it steals from a bunch of different models that already exist. CBT is one of them. Mm-hmm. Cognitive behavioral therapy is one of them. The main principle of cognitive behavioral therapy is that idea that you have a core negative belief and we want to replace it with a positive belief.
Right.
That's part of the EM. That's part of the R, right? The reprocessing part. There's also an element of narrative therapy in there, meaning what's the stories that you tell about yourself and about your life, and how do we rewrite those stories? That's part of EMDR. Looking at, you know, a little bit of people's trauma history, both big T trauma, meaning physical abuse, sexual abuse, maybe witnessing, you know, a traumatic death at an early age before the age of 18, and little T traumas. You know, you said something earlier that I wanted to, when I said there's so much to unpack, you mentioned what I would call a little T trauma, or what we would call a little T trauma, which is, you know, just an example is like, you're 8, you're on a soccer league, you idolize your coach, and you one day accidentally, you know, score one for the other team, right? You kick it in the other net, and your coach flips out and tells you you're stupid and you'll never amount to anything, right?
Right.
People probably wouldn't be like, that's traumatizing. Well, yeah, it is to an 8-year-old when you idolize your coach and you've been humiliated, right?
Yep.
And so that has a residue. And so people come in with all sorts of things that other people may not call trauma, but it's stuck. And they live in this world where they think, I'm never going to amount to anything because mm-hmm. my coach told me that when I was 8, right? And it's tucked away somewhere deep, 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 deep. But when the right elements hit, it pops up again, right? So there's that. But there's also people who come in with things that they're trying to work on that have nothing to do with trauma, that are, you know, maybe studying for the national paramedic exam and they've, you know, having a tough time doing it. And we can anchor in all sorts of positive beliefs, and we're not talking or looking at trauma at all. So, I mean, the main thing for a therapist who's doing EMDR is to just listen closely to what's happening for them at that moment and try to help them tease out what's the most important thing that you want to work on right now. And we can do EMDR things that have nothing to do with sitting in front of a light too.
Okay. All right.
Right. And then sometimes we can go to the light. I like to say that. Go to the light.
Don't go to the light.
Don't go to the light. We can, you know, do the use bilateral stimulation to kind of anchor in some other stuff that we want to anchor in for people. Right. I had someone recently, we've been working on the paramedic exam for months and months and months. This was a couple of months ago. And it was a fire guy, and he sent me the screenshot of his passing thing, right? Yeah. Like, there's nothing more wonderful than that, right?
Right, yeah.
And again, has nothing to do with trauma.
And that's amazing, too, that, you know, this is a wonderful tool for people like Robin. Mm-hmm. But also, there's that other avenue to be able to help people.
Yep.
You know.
And anytime you think about mood stuff, right? People right. that have mood stuff. And we all do, yeah. right? Like, we have sure. moods. We sometimes are good, sometimes they're not good.
So somebody with who has extreme anger mm-hmm. issues.
Yeah. Anger, yeah. depressive symptoms of anxiety, right? The truth is that there is no such thing as having depressive symptoms without having anxiety symptoms. It's just, and vice versa, right? It's just a matter of which one's manifesting itself for you.
Right.
Some people tend to, the anxiety manifests more than the depressive symptoms manifest, but they live together. They're siblings. They don't go anywhere without each other. Kind of like Inside Out, the movie, right? You get to see some of those like pieces of,
right. I've seen that movie.
Oh, you would love it. Oh my God, you would so love it. But what I was going to say is just that we can work on any of those different things, pieces of anxiety. It doesn't have to be trauma. It happens to be the number one trauma treatment, but we can take certain symptoms that people are having, like the paramedic exam. A lot of it's fear, right? A lot of yeah, that's sure. fear underneath yeah. it. Or maybe they haven't first of all, I have more than one person that comes in for that type of stuff. But sometimes it's the negative self-talk. It's like, oh, I already failed it.
Right.
So I'm a failure. And that comes from some other place long, long, long ago, right? It has nothing to do with what's happening right now.
And if they come in with that belief already, mm-hmm. they're going to end up. And then unfortunately, if they end up failing, it just reinforces that belief even further.
Yeah.
And then that just becomes a cycle that they believe.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I can't think of anybody that comes and says, oh, I'm the best test taker. You know, you right. always hear like, oh, right. I'm horrible test taking. And it's anxiety, yeah, right? It's all fear. Anxiety and fear. Yeah, yep. yeah.
And there's an element of that process between the therapist and the person that's coming in with that, which is normalizing that, right? Like,
yeah.
you're not the only person that has fear coming into this test. Everybody that takes this test is completely right. fearful of it. It's really about uncovering what are the belief systems that are going on in the background that are running the fear that they're going to fail or that it's too hard, right? Like even just having a mindset that says this is too hard,
yep.
having nothing to do with failing. Well, if you believe it's too hard, like
it's going to be too hard, right?
Right. So it's putting that stuff under a microscope and just trying to switch that mindset, getting them into a new mindset.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So it's for everything. I mean, yeah. it works for everything. And again, not for everybody.
Not for everybody.
It's not for everybody, but though.
The right. fact that there's other options out there like CPT yes. and CBT that are, you know, granted, I mean, I was successful yeah. with both of them, but I, you know, got to that point where CPT just wasn't enough anymore. There was something right. still. And it wasn't until I went through CPT that I realized that there was something still further on in there that I couldn't figure out. And right. and that's when you go to EMDR. And it was just finding, it's not that CPT didn't work. It was finding the right therapy for me. Much like medications, when people are prescribed them, it's just finding the right dose and the right type for it to work for you. It's the same thing with finding a therapist, finding the right therapist too. Like I had gone through so many, because that sounds terrible, but finding a therapist that you're comfortable talking to that makes you feel that relaxation, mm-hmm. who you feel is actively listening, right. makes all the difference in the world.
Because if I didn't have, Lori, or if I didn't have Jeannie or Sydney, I don't think I would have had the same experience.
Sure. I imagine it's much a chemistry issue, just like any other relationship. Yeah. You're getting personal, right? And if you don't have that chemistry, you don't have that safety, you don't feel comfortable, you're not going to have results like you would.
I think finding this, because, you know, a lot of people will end up going into therapy feeling like they're already being judged. Right. So if they already have negative connotation beliefs with judgment against them, or whether people are looking at them wrong, it's hard to get that braveness to go and talk to somebody who you don't know from Adam about some of the most vulnerable aspects of your life, thinking that they're going to judge you, and finding that someone who just looks at you like, you're just like every other person. Like, you know, it happens. Let's work through it. Was the biggest thing for me.
There's a lot of research that says that it doesn't matter what modality the therapist uses for treatment. It's the relationship between the therapist and the patient that is most important.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, there's tons of research that says that. I think
it really has to do with that being comfortable and being able to open up. Because nobody wants to be vulnerable with somebody that they're not comfortable with. That's just never going to happen.
I want to touch on one thing, too, that you just said. You talked about, you were sort of like, you took a breath. You were like, you know, finding the therapist that makes you relax, right? And I think that's the thing that we haven't talked about EMDR, and I want to hear your thoughts about this, is that the difference, I think, between CBT, CPT, and even something that's the other number one trauma treatment or the top three. Those are the top three trauma treatments: CPT, EMDR, and what's called prolonged exposure therapy. Mm-hmm. And what I think the difference is with EMDR is that there's a heavy focus on tuning into your body or dropping into your body in between the sets, meaning the bilateral stimulation sets, at least. That's my approach, is to drop into your body, to start to focus on the fact that if you breathe while we're doing this, you can start to notice your body calm down. You can start to see that, especially if you teach them ahead of time, right? You teach them that on the inhale, my shoulders scrunch up, I become contracted. On the exhale, I can feel my shoulders drop. I can feel my body start to sink into the chair. So I sort of repetitively say that on each set and say, notice your shoulders drop on the exhale. So before we go into the next set again, each time we're calming the body, we're tuning into the body. So we do a lot of prep work with that too, to kind of calm the body, because my favorite traumatologist, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote The Body Keeps the Score, my favorite quote of his is that you cannot have trauma inside of a calm body. If you have a calm body, you're not experiencing trauma. You're not having a traumatic response. So there might be a traumatic event happening, but if your body is calm and you're breathing through it, like, your body is not processing that as trauma. So I think that's the difference between EMDR and everything else, is that there's just a bigger focus on paying attention to the body. And I think I was on another podcast recently talking about this, that our institutions, our educational system has done all of us a disservice, because no one taught us about the body.
Right.
If you were trained before 2015, even, to be honest, lots of schools even after 2015 aren't training it today. They're still not training. That trauma is held in the body. It's not a psychological issue. It's a neurobiophysiological process. And if you're trained before recently, you don't know that. No one taught you that. You have to learn it on your own by learning EMDR or some other skill like that. So there's a lot of therapists who are, you know, have their degrees, but they don't understand this process. They don't get it unless they've really learned from a guy like Bessel van der Kolk, or what's called somatic therapy, which is about processing this stuff that's held in your body, because trauma's held in every single cell of your body still.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I noticed my therapist did, is when we would, she would let me pick which topic, which trigger point I wanted to talk about, which I felt was very important, because there were some days where since I would do my calming before, I knew in my head what I felt like I could mentally handle that day and what I couldn't. Mm-hmm. So she would, you know, go through, this is what we have left. And I would pick one, and we would briefly talk about it beforehand. She's like, when you say this, or when this happens, or when you think about that traumatic event, what do you feel? Like, just asking me, what do you feel, was the biggest thing. And, you know, I would pay more attention to, like, my breathing would get a little bit more faster. I could feel my heart rate going a little bit faster, but then also that warm feeling in your body where you have anxiety or something happens and it just kind of washes over you. Mm-hmm. You know, you get punched in the stomach, you get the wind knocked out of you, that type of feeling. Right. I'm like, okay, that's what I'm feeling. And she's like, okay, so we're going to think about the thing, we're going to think about the event, and then we're going to go through it. And then we would do it. And then, you know, I would start crying in the middle of, you know, the thing. It would just start flowing and start affecting me. And then we'd come out of it, and she'd be like, okay, she's like, take a few seconds. She's like, take some deep breaths. What came up? What are you feeling? What, you know, did anything new come up? Like, it was the right questions. She would ask the right questions, and she would say the right things. And I think the biggest thing was taking that extra few seconds after the vibration and the sounds to just deep breaths. You know, she talked very extensively about box breathing, what the Navy SEALs did. She's like, because when you get to that state of anxiety and that state of heightened, you don't realize your body's, you know, you don't realize you're breathing so quickly.
Right.
So she's like, so we'll just do some box breathing, process that thought, and then we'll talk about it in the extents if we need to afterwards. Right. But it was just, she knew how my body worked, what my body responded to, and the right things to say and to have me do to make sure that it didn't, like, hit me like a ton of bricks.
Right.
And that was so important.
Yeah. And I think that any good therapist is going to check in with their patient as they walk through the door to figure out, like, is today the day we're doing EMDR or not, right?
She asks me that every single time. Right. She's like, what are we feeling today?
Yeah, exactly. And so, because I have people who come in and they, because I'm like a, you know, I'm an EMDR cheerleader, much like you are. Yeah. So, because, like, once you know how powerful it is, you want everybody to do it because you know how powerful it is. So I think people who know I'm an EMDR cheerleader, they come in and they feel, and this is probably something that I have to look at myself, right, is to be like, maybe I need to tone down my EMDR cheerleading a little bit, because they would come in and they would feel badly that they didn't want to do it. And I'm like, no. Like, no, you don't need to feel like I'm going to force you to do it. I'm never going to force you to do anything that you don't want to do. Well, you need to be in the right state of mind.
Yeah.
You need to, the therapist needs to know, like, what does the rest of your day look like today, right? Because if you're going to a wedding, like, we're not doing EMDR today. Or if you're going to work, like, sometimes people would say, you know, oh, I want to come in, you know, before my night shift or something. No, like, we're not doing, yeah, you can come in, but, like, we're going to keep it real light because you're going to go to work in 2 hours, you know, like,
and you've got that residual.
Yeah. So, you know, any good therapist is going to do that stuff. Right. And all people who go to therapy should know that they can say,
not today.
I don't want to talk about anything heavy today.
Yeah.
Right.
Just not in the right state of mind, right? Like, you can drive that conversation, and any good therapist is going to follow your lead.
Yeah.
It's all about, we as therapists have to trust that our patients know better than we know about how they're doing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so I'm really excited about this episode. This is absolutely fantastic, Robin. I'm so happy that you wanted to come in and wanted to be so open. This was fantastic.
I'm just hoping that more people, Because I've even had people off duty like text me and say, hey, have you done this? Because anytime someone says something, I'm always like, have you thought about EMDR? And like, oh, I don't believe in that. And I'm like, okay.
They're like, you well. And your EMDR, stop it.
And I'm like, but I think that most, a lot of people remember me how I was a year ago and what mentality I was and how I was grumpy and how I wasn't in the best of moods. And they see me now and they're like, wow. You know,
you're transformed.
Yeah. What's changed? And it's like, oh, well, because a lot of, you know, with the weight loss over the last mm-hmm. year, it's mm-hmm. like you don't realize until you fix like your mental health and your emotional health that your physical health falls along with it.
Sure.
Like, you don't realize how much all those things are tied together. So it's like, oh, well, you know, what are you doing to lose weight? And I'm like, huh, I fix it up here.
Yeah. it's a shedding. Like, yeah. It's a shedding, yeah. You know? Yeah. It's
It makes sense.
It's so true. It's yeah. so true. It's amazing. So, and I'm so happy for you that you've had this experience yeah. and that you're feeling so good. I love it.
I don't think I'd be in the same place. I did not think, like, a year ago that I'd be where I am today if I didn't yeah. do EMDR, yeah. you
so
know?
I have a question, that. Too, that I thought of earlier and I just had never gotten to. So any of the traumas that you had before, you had mm-hmm. gone through EMDR and you went through those trigger points, yeah. right? Is there a thing, like, where if one of those trigger points comes, like, do you go back and redo on those trigger points?
No, so I don't go... So what, okay, it's weird. So when you have those trigger memories, at least for me in my head, I've already learned how to process those. So if it pops up, it's almost like you're talking yourself out of it.
Right. Okay.
So you'll have a trigger point that comes up and it's like, oh, well, this was my fault, or that person died because of me. And it's automatic. It's like you retrain your brain and it's like you automatically think like, well, no, here's 8 other different situations that could have happened. Or, hey, it's almost like you're teaching your subconscious to talk positively about yourself so that you believe it yourself. So it's not even, once you do it enough, it becomes just automatic.
And so maybe that mm-hmm. answers the second part of my question is, what about new traumas?
Same thing.
Same thing, right? Same thing. So you've taught your brain. So this is like, you know, teaching you how to deal with everything that you've had and kind of hashing it out inside yourself.
Yeah.
But also teaching you for the future of how to deal with something that comes yeah. up.
And you don't, and it's one of those things where you learn so much about how your brain works and how your belief system works within yourself, because everybody's is different.
Sure.
That when something happens, whether it be a minor situation or a little trauma or a big trauma, you're able to identify in your head whether or not it's something you're able to work through. And I think that's been my biggest thing, is that little traumas compound to big traumas if they're not dealt with or they're not processed properly. And I'm able to process those little traumas like this, like it's, you know, like a deck of cards. And I think that helps make those big traumas not feel so big. But I also can identify that if that big trauma gets too big, I'm like, I can just call my therapist and be like, hey, I need a session. I got to work through this one thing that I can't get through in my head. I can't process it. It's not like I can't just work through it. And she'll right. be like, okay, let's do it. Cause we can even just talking to her telehealth, I don't necessarily need to do all the stimulation. Sometimes it's just talking to her
right.
about it. So I can just hop on telehealth with her and just be like, hey, this is what happened. And she's just like, this is what we're working through.
Yeah.
And, but I think having that, like this atomic or autonomic like reaction in your brain that just says, hey, fix these little things. That's not true, Robin. That didn't happen. That's not going to happen that way. Don't right. think like that. Really? Yeah. Come on now. Type thing in your head, like a little elf. I don't even realize is there.
I think you're talking about, mastering self-awareness.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's like yeah. you've mastered the ability. I also would argue that meditation would give you this same skill if people would stick to it and do it for a long period of time, because you become your best sort of witness of yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And that goes a little bit back to how we drop into our bodies yep. in EMDR too. So we're paying attention to our entire physiology, including what our thoughts are, but also what's happening in our bodies. And so you just become an expert at knowing yourself. Yeah. Right.
It's weird.
And that's a huge part of it, because normally we're We're just like a brain walking around, or we're a head walking around on a numb body.
We're an autopilot.
Right. We're on autopilot. Yeah. Yeah.
So essentially you've become a Jedi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. I think the other thing too, one last thing I'll say about EMDR in terms of the approach is that, to your original question, is that we think of it from a perspective of, let's look at what it is that they're saying are the issues, and let's try to figure out what are the core negative beliefs that are underneath these things. And when we can identify what's the core, what's the real bottom line root cause, if we take the root first, the idea is that if you drew an octopus and it has a head and it has 8 tentacles, and if you think of the root cause being at the head, if you can deal with that root cause, I'm going to mix metaphors, chop the head off of the snake, right? Yeah. i.e. octopus, the idea is that the tentacles will fall away because they've led to these other things that have happened. Some people aren't ready to go back to what the original core negative belief is because it's too much. It's too traumatizing.
So you
it's
have
childhood
to take it
trauma.
One
so then we ask people, we typically say to people, I'm not sure if they did this with you, but we look at it from this perspective of, what's the first, worst, and last thing that happened to you based on this core negative belief? And if they're willing to talk about what the first is, that's the way that we want to go.
Okay.
Not everybody's ready to do it, because the idea is that our neural memory network is so powerful that if your core but negative belief is I'm not lovable, and you think it's about the relationship that you're in today, when you get in front of the light or doing the bilateral stimulation, that core negative belief, if you're not watching me, I'm going to do something with my hands. Your neural memory network is going to take you all the way back to when you were, you know, 5, of the thing that happened when you believed that you were unlovable.
Right.
Having nothing to do with what's happening today.
Yeah.
So if we can get there first, sometimes we can cut away all this other stuff, and then miraculously the current day relationship goes away.
Yeah.
And we're not even really, we never really talked about the current day relationship because we dealt with the core root issue.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we think about it. But again, we go where our patients are willing to go.
Sure. Right.
So that's the approach.
Yeah. Amazing stuff.
It
sounds like truly beneficial and amazing. So. Robin, thanks for coming
You're
in today.
Very welcome, thanks, Robin.
Absolutely.
Amazing. And if ever in the future you'd like to join us again, we always have a spot on the couch for you.
I don't know what I'd talk about.
Well, I don't know.
I'm sure you could find something.
I'm sure I could find something. I'm a Jane of all trades.
That's right. So.
And a Jedi.
And a Jedi. I love that.
Yeah, we
Mm-hmm. I'll have to go get some Star Wars tattoos.
There you go.
Perfect. All right, guys. What a great episode. Thanks again, Robin, for joining us. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
This has been an Olive Pit production. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.